Morning. Today's Daf and Shabbos Mem Ches. We are beginning this morning the fourth parak of the Masechta. We start with a Mishnah on Mem Zayin Amud Beis. This is a Mishnah. This is a parak of Atmana. We're talking here in this parak about the installation of food on Shabbos, a topic which already was brought up earlier in the Masechta. Obviously, this parak is directly related with the previous parak. Previously, in the third parak, we spoke about Shehiyah, putting the food on the fire going into Shabbos. Really, before Shabbos. And as we learned in the third parak, one has to do certain preparations regarding the food and regarding the fire in order to be able to leave the food on the fire going into Shabbos. You have to adjust the fire under certain conditions. The food has to be cooked under most conditions. And so this is the topic of Shehiyah. So related to Shehiyah is Hatmana. Now, Hatmana is the installation of the food. And basically, Hatmana can be broken down into two categories. When you're matmin, when you are insulating the food in order to keep its heat, so you can either be matmin bedavar hamosif hevel, you can insulate it with something that's going to add heat. In other words, that the material that you're using is going to actually not just simply keep it warm, but actually add it to its heat. Or hatmana could be bedavar she'ena mosif hevel. You are just simply insulating the food with a material that's just going to preserve and maintain its heat, but not going to add to the heat. These two categories, again, were brought up earlier in the third parak, and truth of the matter is we even touched on it earlier in the Masechta. And the halacha is very clear. Let's start with the first category of Hatmana B'davar HaMosif Hevel, insulating with something that's going to increase the heat. This is prohibited, both on Shabbos and before Shabbos. One is not allowed to insulate any food, not only on Shabbos, but also before Shabbos as well. It is going to be prohibited. The reason why this is so is because if you end up insulating with something that's going to add heat, it obviously shows the desire that you're not just simply looking to preserve it, but you're also looking and interested in cooking it as well. And it may result in you're going to come and be mechata begechalim. You're going to stoke the coals in order to accelerate the cooking process. And so, and it goes without saying that if the food is not fully cooked, so then obviously then it results also in the actual cooking on Shabbos as well. But let's assume that the food is fully cooked. Still, it would be prohibited for concern of Shem Yechata B'Gacham that you may end up stoking the coals. On the other hand, when talking about the category of Hatmana B'Davar She'ena Mosif Hevel, if the material that's used for insulation is just there to maintain the heat, so this is something which one is allowed to do before Shabbos, but not on Shabbos itself. Okay, so obviously now it becomes critical to know what materials are mosif hevel and what materials are just simply there to maintain the heat. Even b'davar she'eino mosif hevel, one cannot do that on Shabbos itself. Okay, and we'll discuss a little bit more of that. And this is our parak, and this is what we're going to be discussing over the next little bit. It is not a long parak, it's a short parak. Parak ends on Nun Aleph Amud Beis. So a short while to discuss the issues of Atmana, and as you'll see already in today's daf, other issues as well to be brought up in this parak. The Mishnah starts off by Metamnim Uvama in Tomnim. With what materials can I do Hatmana with, and with what materials can I not do with Hatmana with? And if you look at the first Rashi on the Mishnah, Habala Sala Kedera Me Al Gabi Kira Ula Tomna B'davar Acher. So you had the pot on the stovetop or in the oven, and then what you wanted to do before Shabbos is you took it off in order to insulate it. You're going to insulate it with some other material. The Amru Chachamim and Rashi says Ein Tomnim B'davar HaMosif Hevel Ela B'davar HaMamid Hevel. And again, we're going to start off with the premise that the only insulation that can be done is with materials that are going to maintain the heat. This is before Shabbos, but not with materials that are going to increase the heat. So mihu amosiv aser. So our Mishnah's objective over here is to teach us what materials are going to add heat and therefore be prohibited even before Shabbos. So the Mishnah continues: lo begefer v'lo bezevah v'lo bemelach v'lo besiv v'lo bechol bein lachen bein yevashin. So the Mishnah first gives the listing of materials that are going to increase the heat and therefore you cannot do it even before Shabbos. The Mishnah starts off by discussing gefes. Gefes is basically the residue of the olive press. Now, in a moment, we're going to discuss and deliberate whether or not it could be other types of presses as well. But right now, we're going to assume that's the olive press. after pressing the oil, so you're going to have like a residue of the olives themselves. They're very moist, they're very warm. And that's gefa, zevel. Zevel presumably is manure. Doesn't sound that particularly appealing to use that as your material for insulation, but apparently it is something which is combustible and it provides heat. Melech is salt, sit is some sort of lime, and chol is sand. So these materials that the Mishnah starts off with are materials that are going to increase heat, and therefore you cannot use them. And it doesn't matter if these materials are lach or yavish, whether they're moist or they're dry. V'loba tefen, v'loba zagin, v'loba muchin, v'loba asavin, b'zman shehin lach, n'aval tomnen b'hem k'shehin yavishim. Now, the next list of materials in the Mishnah are materials which are only going to add heat only when they're in the condition of being moist, but not when they're dry. We're going to quickly run through the materials that are mentioned here. Lobatevin, straw. Zagin. Zagin is also a press, but here we're talking about the grapes that were pressed and the residue of the grapes. Muchin basically, Rashi says, is anything which is soft. Cotton would fall under this category. Asavin is grass. So these materials are only going to increase heat only under the conditions where they're moist, but not when they're dry. And therefore, when they're dry, they're only there to maintain the heat, and therefore it would be permitted. We go right to the Gemara, Yibayiluhu. The Gemara starts off with the following question, Gefesh al Zesim Tanan. Now, when the Mishnah says Gefes, as a material that's going to increase the heat, so when the Mishnah is describing it, it is the residue of the olive press. That's clear. Aval Deshim Shim Shapidami. But let's say we're pressing some sort of other oil. Let's say we're pressing sesame seed oil. And what about the residue of the sesame seed oil, the sesame seeds? Is that the same thing? Or maybe no. Maybe when the Mishnah uses the word zephes, it actually was already including the press, the residue of the sesame seeds. And the Gemara is assuming that if the Mishnah is talking about sesame seeds being a material that increases heat, well, certainly the material, the residue of the olive press, for sure is going to increase the heat. And so when the Mishnah says Zephes. When the Mishnah says Gefes, so are we talking about the residue of the olive press or even the sesame seed press? Tashma, the Gemara says, Damar Rabbi Zera Mishum Chad Debei Rabbi Yanai. So the Gemara says, well, from the Mishnah itself, it's not perfectly clear, but we do have a statement that goes back to Rabbi Yanai. And that is Kupa Shetaman Ba. Let's say I had a box and I insulated it. Asal anicha al gefes shel zesim. One is prohibited from putting it on top of a layer of olive residue. So shma mina shel zesim tanan. So the Gemara says, so what do you see from here? That we are describing only the residue of olives, but presumably the residue of something else like sesame seeds would be fine. So the Gemara says, "La'olamim lachalayin atman the deshum shemim nami aser." So the Gemara says, "Well, no, not necessarily. Maybe what I could argue is the following: that the residue of the sesame seeds are going to be a material that increases the heat, much like the residue of the olives." And le'ingin asuke, as we turn to the top of Mem Ches Amud Aleph, hevla dezesim maske hevla deshum shemim la maske hevla. The Gemara says, however, there are degrees. Literally here, we mean degrees. There are degrees. When it comes to the olive residue, so that is really going to be a suke hevla. That's going to contribute a lot of heat. However, the residue of the shumshumim are not going to be contributing and adding as much heat. Now, what kind of distinction is the Gemara making? Take a look at the top Rashi on Mem Chesem and Aleph, where he writes a suke hevla. Kigon zeshi hit me medaver acher. V'hiniyachupa al hagefes, deleika elash hagefes ma'ale hevel, lemala, umarsiach kedera shibakupa. So it's an interesting Rashi, and Rashi basically says like this. When we're talking about using the residue of the olives in terms of a material, so that is a material that adds tremendous heat. And therefore, if I took my kupa, I took a box where the food was inside the box. When I say a box, by the way, perhaps it's better to describe it as a pot. It'll be easier to view it. So if I take a pot and I put it on top of the gefes shel zesim and the residue of the olives, because the residue of the olives here are adding so much heat, it is actually manufacturing heat, it's producing heat. So therefore now the way we're going to view it is that basically it's going to heat up the pot. So now you're basically doing hatmana bedavar hamosif hevel. Because it is heating the pot up so much, so now we view it as if the pot itself is part and parcel of the gefishal zesim, and therefore providing the hatmana for the contents of the kupa of this pot. However, when it comes to gefes of shumshamin, that is true that it is considered an insulator. It's also true that it's considered a davar hamosif hevel, but that's only when I take the food itself and directly insulate it within the gefeshel shumshamin. Meaning that there it doesn't provide enough heat so that if it's underneath the pot we're going to view it now as it heating up the pot and thereby providing an insulation by heating up the pot to the extent where now the contents of the pot are going to be considered insulated within the pot. Okay. So basically now what the Gemara has provided for us is the following as a guideline for hatmana. Hatmana means that the food has to be fully enveloped within the material. However, if the material itself is providing so much heat, like Geffen Shel Zesim, so then it doesn't have to be totally around the food itself. But if the pot is around the food, and certainly the pot is insulating the food, and the gefis is underneath the pot, so then that too is also going to be a violation of hatmana, and that one is not allowed to do. Now, if you're thinking carefully about what I just said, it comes out now that if what is underneath the pot is a significant source of heat, so the Gemara just informed us that under those circumstances, that too would be a violation of Atmana, and that you're not allowed to do. Now, let's remind each other, you're not allowed to do it neither on Shabbos, you're not allowed to do that before Shabbos as well. Now, if this is true, so then it brings us to a tremendous difficulty. Meaning because now what we have over here is that if the heat source is directly under the pot like we just described, you can't leave that situation, that condition, neither on Shabbos, nor before Shabbos as well. Now, if that's true, so what do we do before every Shabbos? We take our food in the pot and we leave it on a fire going into Shabbos. Isn't that too going to be a violation of Atmana? And take a look at the top Tosfos over here, where obviously he's bothered by this question. So Tosha says, basically what we just got done saying, that if what we just learned in the Gemara is correct, so then one is not allowed to leave a pot of food directly on the coals going into Shabbos. And Tosha even goes a step further. Even if we were to, let's say, adjust the fire by laying a layer of ash over the fire, but still, if it is mala hevel, if it is contributing heat directly underneath, so now it is warming up to the pot to the extent now where we are doing hatmana, which is categorically prohibited. Hatmana v'davar hamosif hevel. V'yesh tema, and Tosha says, and it's one, and it's really a wonder. Hey chanu matminim al kir shalanu shikorin ashtra v'afapi shikor for no so who mosif hevel. And Tosha asks a really simple question. So how do we rationalize? How do we justify our practice in which Tosha says minag ashkenaz is that going into Shabbos? So the fire is adjusted, the coals are adjusted, but how do we do that? How do we leave our pots in a kira going into Shabbos? Meaning Tosfos assumes that the practice of the Minhag Ashkenaz is a correct practice, but having just learned the Gemara together, Tosfos says, how does that work? I should have finished reading the question. So Tosfos over here provides the following as a fundamental understanding of Hatmana. So the Reis says you have to give some sort of explanation because our minug is a good minug. In other words, you'll see this in Tosos from time to time, that Tosos makes an assumption that minug Ashkenaz is a good minug, and as a result of that, it needs an explanation. I know it sounds a little bit like justification, rationalization, but when Tosfos says there's a minhag, Tosfos is referring to an accepted minhag, a mekubal minhag that has already been ratified and verified. So Tosfos says, so we say like this. You see, with something like Gefes is obviously a very loose material. We're talking about olive residue. And what you could do with the olive residue is that you could take it and you can envelop the entire food within it. But when it comes to Akira, so in other words, we're putting the pot on the coals and we adjusted the coals. The idea that it's going to be we're going to envelop the entire pot within the coals, that never will come to be. That's one point Tosfos makes, but really it's the next point which is fundamental. So Tosfos says, look, in terms of the construction of our Kira, meaning Tosfos over here is giving a description of what they used back in the day in the Middle Ages in France and in Germany. So basically it was some sort of makeshift oven that they had back then. You know, obviously more advanced than the ones that were used in the time of the Gemara. Obviously less advanced than the ones we use nowadays. But basically he's describing some sort of oven. The only time that Hatmana is prohibited, says Tosfos, is when the item that is contributing the heat, the Davar HaMosiv Hevel, is making direct contact with the pot itself. Aval Tanur o Chafira, however, an oven or some sort of recess within the ground. Shiyesh Avir Bein Defanos LeKedera, where there is airspace between the pot and the walls of the oven, Ein LeEser Yoser MeHashah. That's not Hatmana. Tosfos says that's Shehiya, but that's not Hatmana. Now Shehiya, you go back to the third parak, and we learned together that if you adjust a fire, so then you're allowed to do Shehiya before Shabbos. But if the item that is Mosif Hevel is not directly touching the pot itself, that is not Hatmana, says Tosfos. Even though the entire pot is within the oven. And so Tosfos over here provides for us a fundamental understanding of Hatmana, in that it only will be Hatmana when there is direct contact with the source of fire and the pot. But if the fire is in the oven, but not directly touching the pot, this is not going to be Hatmana, but rather this falls under the category of Shehiya. And then we go back to the third parak with the rules and regulations regarding Shehiya, but it's not Hatmana. That is Tosfos over here in the beginning of our parak of Hatmana, providing for us a fundamental principle in terms of how to define and give parameters for the definition of Hatmana. We're back in the Gemara, we're in Mem Ches Amud Aleph, we're continuing from the top of the Amud. Rabba v'Rabbi Zera Ikla Lebei Reish Kalusa. The Gemara is going to tell the following anecdote. Where Rabban and Rabbi Zera goes to the house of the Reish Galusa, Chazulahu Abda de Anach Kuzu de Maya Puma de Kumkama. And what he saw is one of the attendants over there at the house of the Reish Galusa, and he was taking water, cold water, and he put it on Shabbos on top of another pot. And in order to, well, we'll get to what degree he wanted to get the water to get to. But Nazir Rabba. But Rabba was really unhappy with this behavior. So Rabbi Zera says to Rabba, wait one second, how is that any different than what we're going to learn together in just a little bit? Not today, but at the end of this parak. We're going to learn together that one is allowed to put a pot on top of another pot on Shabbos. Now we'll discuss that in greater detail, but for now, suffice to say that is permitted. And so therefore, Rabbi Zera wonders, why is Rabba upset? In other words, all this attendant is doing is nothing different than mechem agabe mechem. So Amrale, so Rabbi explains, so Rabbi explains that over there, all you're doing in the case of mechem agabe mechem is just simply maintaining the heat of the pot on top. But over here, what this attendant is looking to do is actually get the water in that urn from below. From below a heated level to above a heated level, otherwise known as cooking. Now, over here, he's looking to do an act of cooking, and that obviously is going to be prohibited. The mechem al gabe mechem is just there to maintain the heat. Much to discuss over here, but just quickly, if I could summarize Tosus's point, Tosus Dibra Maschal Maishnam Mimecham Agabi Mecham. So if you just drop down to the third white line, Tema. Dehechidami Iyazalaz Bohecha Hava Baile Mishre, Alpha Pisha Mavasho, Mi Lo Yada the Toldas Or Kaor. And I'm just going to skip one more line. Vi'ila Hafshir, Hecha Masik Dasr. So Tosus over here asks beautifully. Well, what exactly is going on in the case of the Reish Galusa? Well, if he's trying to get the water in this urn from below Yasalazbo to above Yasalazbo, and he's using the lower pot as basically the heat source, well, that of course is Aser. Meaning, the pot below, if you're using it as a heat source, in order to get the temperature of the water from below Yasalazbo to above Yasalazbo, well, obviously that's going to be prohibited, obviously. And the pot below is being heated by the fire, and it's what's called toldas eish. We already discussed this previously. Toldas eish is an act of cooking. It's an act of cooking min haTorah. And if that's true, so then that would be nisa d'oraisa. And Tosus continues, and if all he's looking to do is just simply take the chill out of the water, but not to get the temperature of the water over Yatzalazbo, well, that of course would be mutter. And so Tosus wonders, so what exactly is the issue over here? And he writes, and I'm just dropping down to the end of the Tosfos, the last three lines of the Tosfos. Venira la Rashba, so he's quoting over here the Rashba. When Tosfos is quoting the Rashba, it's one of the Balei HaTosfos. The Hadash, not to be confused with the Rashba, who we normally cite, but not by Tosfos. That's the Sephardic Rishon. Venira la Rashba, the Hadash Arin says, Kiton Shalmaim Kenegad Amadura, Hanya Berichik Min Amadura Shal Olam Lo Yuchalav Oli De Bishol. In terms of taking the chill off the water, that can only be done when you're putting it proximate to the fire, but not too close. Only if you're putting it in a place where it is close enough to the fire, but not too close, so that the maximum temperature that it could get to is just simply enough to take off the chill. Ava bikiruv. But if I'm putting the pot close to the fire, afilu lahafshir, and my intention right now is not to cook the water. I just simply want to get the chill off. But if I leave it in a place where it could cook, that is going to be prohibited. That's what Rabba was objecting to. And why? Tosfos writes, Dilma mishtale va'asili hanicham sham. Because what you may end up doing is you may end up forgetting it there, and it may end up cooking. Achi ispashel. Ulahashi masakacha da'asr. That's what Rabba was objecting to in our Gemara over here. Bishvil sheyichamu diktani hasam haynu klamer b'makum sheyachu lavo lidei sheyichamu. Now, it simply means over here that he didn't want to heat the pot up. He just simply wanted to take the chill off. And the concern is that if you engage in this behavior, you may end up forgetting, leaving it there, and then, not intentionally, but still, you end up cooking on Shabbos. That is the way Tosfos understands our Gemara over here, in terms of why Rabba was objecting. A second story. Hadr Chazir de Paros Distudor Apume de Kuva, Va'anach Natla Ilave. A second thing he saw the attendant doing is that basically there was a pot of some sort of liquid. He put some sort of, let's call it a towel. It's not a perfect translation. But let's say he put a towel on top of the pot. And then what he did is he took some sort of ladle. A natla is a cup, right? The Gemara back in Brachos when describing the washing cup in the morning. So it's called a natla. That's the Aramaic word for describing some sort of small receptacle. Right, when we wash our hands, al netilas yadayim, right? That probably comes from the word natla, which is a cup that you use to wash your hands in the morning. So va'anach natla ilave. And so, again, the situation over here is that the attendant of the Reish Galusa had a pot of whatever it was, soup or whatever, and put a towel on top of it, and put some sort of ladle on top of the towel. Nazir Rabba, again, Rabba showed disdain towards this action. Rabba was not happy. Amalei Rabbi Zeira, am I? So why? Why are you unhappy with this? Amalei Hashachazis. So Rabbi's response is, well, you'll see. And now the Gemara is a little bit strange because it sounds like from the Gemara that Rabbi basically was going to allow the attendant to violate whatever Issa Rabbi thought he was about to violate. Why didn't Rabbi just stop him? It's a fair question. But anyway, the story continues. And now what happens is that because he put a ladle on top of the towel, so that submerged the towel into the pot, Let's assume, by the way, that we're talking about water over here, and you'll see why I say that in just a moment. And so what happened now is that the attendant took the towel, and he squeezed the towel, and Rabbi says, there you go. Amalei maishnami parnuka. So he says, okay. So Rabbi Zera says to Rabbi, fine, I hear you, but how is that any different than the case of the prunka? The prunka, Rashi says, is a beged ha'asur lefros ala gigish, a person oso b'shabbos. There was some sort of barrel, and there was an allowance that was given in order to take the towel and put it on top of the barrel. So Rabbi Zera says to Rabbi, so okay, fine, I understand. So he squeezed the towel, but there are other allowances that allow a towel to be put over the pot, over the barrel. Amalei hasam lo kapi de lave, hacha kapi de lave. So Rabbi's response is, it depends why you're squeezing the towel. There's no hakpada, meaning in the case of the barrel, he doesn't really care much about the towel. Over here, he does care. Now, Rashi doesn't give much in terms of an explanation, but presumably what the Gemara means is the following. Rashi says, lo kapi alayim shari b'mayim shari l'kach asuya. Rashi says that in the case that is permitted, in the case of the prunka, so there's no hakpada on the towel. Meaning it's the kind of towel that's designed for this kind of activity. It's like a dish towel. In other words, he's not interested in the towel being clean or maintaining cleanliness. And over there, there's no concern that he's going to end up squeezing it because it's just a shmata, it's just a rag. Over here, however, it's the kind of material where he wants it to be clean. And so therefore, him wringing it out is part and parcel of the malacha of, now Rashi doesn't say this, but let's assume that what Rashi is referring to is the malacha of libun. When you take a garment, any kind of fabric, and you put it in the water and then you squeeze out the water, that's part of the laundering process, and that in fact would be a violation of the malach of libun. And because the person is makbid, because he wants it to be clean, so therefore this over here is constituted as part of the malach of libun. Okay, so far in the Gemara we had basically three separate discussions. One, a follow up to the Mishnah's hatmana. Regarding when the Mishnah talks about geffes, it's talking about the residue. Are we talking about the residue of grapes? Are we also talking about the residue of sesame seeds as well? The Gemara says they're both going to be considered davar mosif hevel, but the grape residue, sorry, I didn't mean grape. The olive residue is just simply a more intense davar hamosif hevel, and you can't even put the olive residue underneath the pot, which then led us to Tosos and a really fundamental discussion in terms of what is the very definition of Atmana. And then we just went through two stories, where Rabbi and Rabbi Zera were guests at the house of the Reish Galusa, and Rabbi was not in favor of a couple of practices that were done by the attendant of the Reish Galusa. V'lo b'tevin, we are now in the Gemara Mem Chesam and Aleph, we're at the two dots, and a discussion in our Mishnah, but as we're going to see in just a moment, it's really not a question of Atmana, it's a muksa issue. We come back to the topic of muksa for just a moment. So now, one of the things that we talked about regarding insulation is muchin. And any soft item, let's call it right now cotton. So when I do atmana with cotton, so now we're talking about tufts of cotton. So does it turn these cotton from muksa items to non-muksa items? Now, in terms of muchin, why are they muksa? Rashi over here writes, muchin, einan elalasos mehem levadin shekorn felter. Okay, so we're talking about a material that is extraordinarily, that's very precious. They use it to make felt, or whatever Rashi is describing over here. Umuksin hein lemalacha v'as letautalan. And Rashi says it's muksa, and you're not allowed to move it. But now that I'm using them for the purposes of Hatmana, can I not make the argument that my usage of them has just demonstrated that for me and this Shabbos, I desire to make it a non-muksa item? Can we give it the status of a kli so that for the remainder of Shabbos, I can now use these tufts of cotton for other purposes as well? It sounds like from Rashi, and again, Rashi doesn't use this wording, so I say this with a little bit of hesitation, but it sounds like from Rashi that Rashi is putting the tufts of cotton under the category of muksa, machmas chisaron kis, meaning that these tufts of cotton right now, it hasn't been yet made into any kind of clothing, but in its raw state, it's something that's very valuable to you, and therefore it is muksa because it just simply is something of high value. Sounds that way from Rashi. Again, I'm not totally convinced, but that sounds that way from Rashi. Anyway, the question now becomes the following. If I'm using this now if I'm making usage of it for this particular Shabbos, can that now remove the muksa status from the item? So this is a question that Rav Adar Bar Masna asks from Abaye. Amalei Abaye's response is, V'chim imnei she'in lo kupa shel teven, omidu makbit kupa shel muchin. So he asks rhetorically, this just because he did not have a straw, and now he has to use these items of value. Just because right now he's in a pinch and he has to use these items of value, does that diminish the value of these items? Meaning these items are valuable, and therefore they're going to have muksa status, and therefore he can't move them on Shabbos. Now, it really is interesting because what the Gemara basically is teaching us is the following. A muksa item may still have the status of muksa going into Shabbos, even if I'm making usage of them, even going into the Shabbos. Meaning, here's what the Gemara just taught us, is that muksa prohibits me from moving an item, but muksa does not prohibit me from benefiting from the item. These tufts of cotton, I can't move them on Shabbos, but I could still use them before Shabbos, set up my pot before Shabbos, where I'm going to be insulating the food, the pot, within these tufts of cotton, even though I can't move them on Shabbos, but I can benefit from them on Shabbos. So that really is that's the yesod regarding the issue of muksa. Lema misayale, the Gemara says, okay, now there is a braisa that seems to fully support what we just learned together. Tamnim begizei tzemer, v'tzipei tzemer, v'loshana shal argaman, v'muchin. One is allowed to do a hatmana with all these materials, different types of wools, and muchin, and these tufts of cotton. Ve'im metalton nosa, but one is not allowed to move them. And it sounds like from the braisa, pretty clearly, that despite the fact that I made usage of them for the purposes of hatmana, they still retain the muksa status. And therefore, even after they were used for the purpose of insulation, after I took the pot out of this, out of these tufts of cotton, and they're sitting there on the ground, and even though I benefited from them, but I can't move them on Shabbos, they still have the status of muksa. So, imishim halo iria. The Gemara says, look, the braisa is pretty good, but if that's your only proof, that's not enough of a proof that we can conclude. Because hachi kamar. Because here's how we could read the braisa. Imlo taman bahen ematalkan losan. Maybe what the braisa means at the end is that if I don't use them for insulation, the default is going to be that they are muksa. So, but if I do use them for insulation, so then I remove the muksa status. Now, that's not a clean reading of the braisa, but you could read the braisa that way. Ihachil maila memra. So the Gemara says, okay, so basically you're telling me that these tufts of cotton are going to be muksa if they're not used. That's really what the braisa is teaching me? The Gemara says, that's not much of a chiddush. So the Gemara says, no, ma'u detei machazel mizgar laihu. The Gemara says, not necessarily. It could very well be that if I have this large patch of cotton balls, right, a good amount, so maybe, even though we didn't make them into a cushion as of yet, and they're still in the raw material state, but maybe what we could argue is that, look, I could sit on them right now. They have some sort of utility for Shabbos, and therefore it's not muksa. That's what we could argue. That's the Havamina. And the Maskana would be, no, that as long as it's still raw material, so it's going to have the muksa status until you make it into a kli. As long as we're discussing cotton balls and large tufts of cotton, so the Gemara now has the following discussion: Rav Chista Share La'adure Udra LeBeisadja B'Shabasa. Let's say your pillow explodes on Shabbos, and you now have all the stuffing material of the pillow all over the place. So Rav Chista says there's an allowance on Shabbos to take all that stuffing and put it back into the pillow on Shabbos. So Eitzer Rav Chanan Bar Chista LeRav Chista. So the following then was challenged against Rav Chista. It's a braisa. Matirin bein atzavar b'shabbos, avalo poschin. One is allowed to untie the neck on Shabbos, right? When the clothing material, it was simple. It was basically some form of a toga. And what they did is it basically was a large piece of material, and a hole was made for the neck so that it slides over the body and your neck goes through the hole. Now, what you could do is the following. If the hole's already there, it just happened to have been sewed up. I say sewed up. I mean, in other words, tied up. So on Shabbos, what you could simply do is untie it. So untying it, meaning that the hole for the neck is already there and all you're doing is untying. So the Braisa says that's fine. Aval ain't lo poschin. But here's what you can't do on Shabbos. If let's say there was no neck hole over there, so you can't make the neck hole from the beginning on Shabbos. This obviously represents an act of finishing the garment, tzmakeh bepatish, and that would be prohibited. Ve'inosin esamuchin lo l'tocha kar v'lo l'socha keses b'yamtov, ve'in tzarech lomar b'Shabbos. Additionally, continues the Braisa, you cannot take the soft material, the stuffing, and put it into a pillow or into some sort of comforter. You can't do this on Yontov nor on Shabbos as well. The Braisa over here says very clearly that you can't stuff a pillow on Yontov and on Shabbos. So this Braisa obviously represents a significant challenge to Rav Chisda. So lo kasha, the Gemara says, okay, but that's not much of a difficulty. Haba chadati, haba atike. The Gemara says, it depends. If we already made the pillow, and then the stuffing comes out, so then you can return it. But if you're making a pillow for the first time, so now you're making a kli on Shabbos, then obviously that's going to be prohibited. That's the difference. That's the distinction. Tainan mihachi, the Gemara is in favor of this distinction. In fact, we're going to see this clearly from the following Braisa. The Braisa says, "Ein nosin esamuchin lo l'tocha kar v'lo l'socha keses b'yamtov v'ein tzarech lomar b'Shabbos." You cannot make a pillow by adding stuffing into the covers, not on yamtov and not on Shabbos. And nashru, however, if the pillow was already made and the stuffing falls out, machzir nosa b'Shabbos v'ein tzarech lomar b'yamtov. So then you can return the stuffing into the pillow, both on yamtov and on Shabbos as well. So in this Braisa, this distinction that we just made is in fact articulated in the Braisa. So it's very clear that this distinction is a good distinction. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rava, Posech Beis HaTzavra B'Shabbos Chayv Chatas. We're going to go back now to the opening of the shirt. Again, I say shirt, I don't mean our modern shirts. I mean, just simply, it was a large swatch of fabric where it's going to go over the body and a hole needs to be made for the neck. If you make that hole for the first time on Shabbos, so that is going to be Isser, it's going to be a Malacha. What malacha are we talking about? Here Rashi says it clearly. I said it before, but I'm just pointing to the Rashi right now because he says it with clarity. Chayv chatos, the last Rashi on the Amud. De hashta kamashvelei mana. Because now you're finishing the shirt. V'chayv mishamake bepatish v'hainu gemar malacha. And so this is the finishing act, and therefore this falls under the category of make bepatish. And it is one of the 39 malachas. Maskala Rav Kahana's, man, we turn to the Amud Beis. How is this any different than ripping off the cover of a barrel? And this is something we're going to be discussing more extensively towards the end of the Masechta. But for now, suffice to say that back in the day they had a barrel and they put some sort of seal on the barrel and they put a lid on the barrel and they put some other material that seals the barrel. And what you're allowed to do on Shabbos is break the seal. And we'll give much better descriptions of it as we get to the end of the Masechta. But this is an activity which is permitted on Shabbos. This Gemara over here and its discussion is obviously going to be relevant halacha l'maisa in terms of opening up containers on Shabbos. And even though we just learned that it's permitted, it's not permitted under all circumstances, but that is well beyond the scope of our daf right now, but it's permitted. So if we're permitted to open up this, to break a seal of a barrel in order to open it, so how is that any different than opening up the shirt of the neck? So Amalei Rava, Zechibur V'Zein Chibur. So Rava says, what do you mean? What's the difference? The difference actually is very straightforward. One is connected, one is not connected. Second Rashi writes the following. Megufa, Einam Menachav V'Satzmo. That the seal that was used to seal the lid to the barrel, that's not part and parcel of the barrel. It's some sort of adhesive material that connects the two, but it's not part of the barrel. V'afa pisha devuka bo, and even though it's clinging to the barrel, einu chashav chibur, it's not considered connected. Sharei linatel omedes. It's expected that seal is going to be broken. Aval habega kishinera kulo chibur. However, when we're talking about the large swatch of fabric, and you're now ripping it open, So obviously, it's at this point, before you ripped it open, it's all considered connected. And now by you ripping it open, you are now making a garment. You're taking two pieces that are connected, you're disconnecting them, you're making a hole for the neck. That is considered a malacha of makeh v'patish. That is Rava's basic distinction between the case of the magufa, which is permitted, and the case of making a hole in the garment in order for your neck to go in, which is prohibited. The distinction between chibur versus no chibur. Okay, and so for the remainder of today's daf, we're going to go off on a tangent. Once we talk about chibur, so the Gemara now wants to use this as opportunity to discuss concepts of chibur, even as it does not pertain to Shabbos, but other areas of halacha. We're at the top of the Amud Beis. We're continuing at the second line down. Ramile Rebbe, Yermile Rebbe Zeratanan. We learned in the following Mishnah. This is a Mishnah in Uksin. Seder Taharos. Shalosh Kofsin V'Shalosh Maftechos V'Habeget Shehu Tafur B'Kalayim Chibur L'Tuma Ad Shiaschil La'atir. When you give your clothing, when you give your shirts to the launderer, so what the launderer used to do is he used to tie the shirts together. Basically put a thread through the shirts, and he did so for a very simple reason. He didn't want you to lose one of your shirts. And so if he took a thread and tied them together, so that way he would ensure that all the shirts would be, none of the shirts would be lost. The second case of this Mishnah in Uksin is Shashal Shom Aftechos, there are keys, and there's basically a key ring in order to keep the keys together. And then the Mishnah also talks about a baggage who tafur b'klayim. The garment is tied together using klayim. It is not really relevant to our discussion over here. Rashi makes this point. So right now we're just going to bypass it. So it is considered chibur l'tumah. It's considered connected vis-a-vis tumah. Ad shiaschil l'hatir. Until you start untying it. And so that means that when these shirts now are tied together for the purposes of laundering, these shirts now considered a unified item. And it will can be considered to be, it will continue to be considered unified until you actually untie it. What did we learn in this Mishnah in Uksin? So the Gemara now draws a conclusion. So it sounds very clearly over here that if it's not during the laundering process, it's still considered connected. Meaning the Mishnah gives us a very clear parameter. When is it considered disconnected? When you physically remove that string that is connecting all these shirts together. The Gemara says, okay, but we're going to contrast that with another Mishnah. This Mishnah is from Kalim. The Mishnah in Kalim writes, Makos Shasa Yad L'Kordos Chibur L'Tumah V'Shas Malacha. Let's say I have a shovel, and right now I need a handle. Okay, so I have the metal piece, but I don't have the wooden handle. And it happens to be that I find a stick on the ground, and it happens to be that it seems like a pretty good fit. And so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to just simply make the stick into a makeshift handle. That's the makel, which is now used as a handle for, it could be a shovel, a hammer, whatever. In other words, you're attaching it to the metal piece. So it is now going to be considered chibur l'tumah. It's going to be considered connected now. So that if an item of tumah touches the metal, so the wooden piece is going to be tameh. Or conversely, if something touches the wooden handle, so the metal piece is going to be tameh as well. Meaning it's all one unified item. But that's only, and now the Mishnah and Kalim writes these two words at the end, that's only b'shas malacha. That's only while you're using it as a utensil, as an instrument. Now b'shas malacha inshallah b'shas malacha lo. Now the clear implication of that Mishnah is that it's only considered connected only during usage, but not before usage and not after usage. Now that Mishnah and Kalim does not seem to be in agreement with the Mishnah and Uksin. The Mishnah and Uksin says that when it comes to the shirts that are stitched together, so it's going to be considered connected both during the laundering process and even afterwards as well. Over here, however, it only is connection only during the actual usage. So it's obviously seemingly a steer between these Mishnayos. So this question was posed to Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera responds as follows. Amar Lei. Hasam shlo b'shas malacha namasu lizarka levei na'itzim. Hacha shlo b'shas malacha nami nichalei di'i mitanfu hader machvelahu. Rabbi Zera gives the following distinction. When we're talking about the shirts that are laundered together, so as far as the shirts being strung together, so this stringing of the shirts together are going to have utility both during the laundering process and even afterwards as well. Why? Because let's say after the laundering process, let's say one of the shirts gets dirty. So what the launderer is going to have to do is he's going to have to send it back into the wash. But because he wants all the shirts together, so he still wants them tied together even after he laundered it, because of the concern and the consideration that it may have to go back into the washing machine. However, over here, when it comes to the tool, the makeshift handle for the tool, I'm only using it as a makeshift handle. And when I'm done with it, so I'm going to take the stick out. I'm not really using this. I'm not making this into a permanent handle. And so therefore, it only has utility only during the malacha, but not after the malacha. That's the distinction that's made by Rabbi Zera. Gemara continues. Now, if you were sitting in a yeshiva and surah, the upcoming Gemara was given credit to Rav Chista. Now, if you were sitting in the yeshiva and Pumbadisa, they would give credit to Rav Kahana. Some give it credit to Rava. Okay, so who's responsible for the upcoming discussion? Okay, so three different possibilities. But either way, and who subscribes to this position? That when two items are connected one to another, so they are going to be considered unified. Again, a continued discussion of this idea of chibur. So I'm Rav Yehuda Amarav, Rabbi Meir he. So Rav Yehuda Amarav says that it is the opinion of Rav Meir Ditnan, and here we're going to be learning our second Mishnah in Kalim this morning. Beis apachu, beis atavim, beis aner, shebikira. Let's say I have the following. Now, again, if we had pictures over here, it would be much easier to envision. But basically, we're discussing a following. We're talking about a kira. We're talking about our classic oven that they used in the time of the Gemara. On the outside of this oven, there were these small compartments where it was used to warm up the beis apach, a little jug of oil, or beis atavlin, or a little bit of spices, or beis aner, or basically oil on the outside of this kira. But they were basically, they were almost like a mini glove compartment, if you will. I'm just trying to give us a picture that was placed externally on the outside of the kira. Now, is this considered now part and parcel of the kira? And presumably, I'm not sure about this next point, presumably they were attachable, detachable. Okay. And so does it now have the status of the kira itself? So metamim b'magave, metamim b'avir divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that's metamim b'maga. And what that means is as follows, is that if an avatum of a source of tumah were to touch the kira, so then these external compartments are also going to become tameh as well. Or conversely, if the avatama touches these compartments, then the kira becomes tameh. But Rameir does, however, say something which is curious, and the Gemara is going to try to figure this out in just a moment. He says, but it's not metameh ba'avir, which means we're talking about earthenware, and we know that when it comes to earthenware, it's going to be metame once the avatama goes into the airspace of the kira. If, however, the avatama goes into the airspace of the tama, so we do not view them as one unified item. Now, the Gemara says the Gemara later on is going to ask the question, well, why should that be? Once we consider a unified item, so then what difference does it make how the oven becomes tame through actual contact or just in the airspace? The Gemara later is going to ask that question. But Rabbi Shimon Matar, now Rabbi Shimon says, no. That these external compartments, being that they're removable, they're detachable, they're not considered part and parcel of the kira, and therefore just because the kira becomes tameh, that's not going to affect these small external compartments. And just because these external compartments become tameh, it's not going to be metameh the kira itself. Now the Gemara immediately reacts to this Mishnah and Kalim. Bishlam ala Rabbi Shimon Kasava lav kira dameh. So as far as Rabbi Shimon is concerned, his position is actually really simple to explain. And that is, he views them as two separate entities, or two separate kalim. It happens to be that currently, right now, you're taking the outer compartment and you're attaching it to the kira, but it's not considered a chibur. So as far as Rabbi Shimon's position is concerned, it actually is really simple to explain. Ela Rabbi Meir, but according to Rabbi Meir, ika kira dame, well, where does Rabbi Meir stand? If we view these external compartments as part and parcel of the kira, so then afilu ba'avir namilu tameh. So what difference does it make how it becomes tameh? Through actual contact or through airspace? And if they're viewed as connected, so then if one becomes tameh through its airspace, then the other one should be tameh as well. And he lav kikira dame, and if it's not like the kira, feel but maganami loli tame. And if it's not considered one unified item, so then if one becomes tame through actual contact, well then the other one should not. Where exactly does Rav Meir stand? So la'olam lav kikira dame. So actually the Gemara says, Rav Meir is of the position that it's not considered part and parcel of the kira. Oh. So it's interesting because the whole reason why this Mishnah was brought in is because we're looking to show who views mechubar, when two things are temporarily connected, who views them as one item. So the Gemara points to Rav Meir. But it's very funny because in the analysis of the Mishnah, the Gemara has just concluded that even Rav Meir fundamentally agrees with Rabbi Shimon that they are considered two separate entities. And so now if that's true, v'rabbanan hu degazer behu. This tumah that jumps from these two items, from the kira to its outer compartment, or from the outer compartment to the kira, that only is a tumah de rabbanan. That's not a tumah de araisa. So the Gemara says, okay, but he gazer behu afilu baver nami l'tamu. But the Gemara says, fine, it's a gzera de rabbanan. It's a tumah de rabbanan. So then, shouldn't it not make a difference whether one becomes tumah through actual contact or one becomes tumah through its airspace? What difference would it make? So the Gemara says, and we saw this idea already earlier in the Masechta, Avabu Rabbanan Hekera Kiheche Delo Asa Lemisra Falei Truma V'Kachim. So the Gemara says, well, the reason why the Chachamim made an exception, an exclusion to the Tumah, is that the Chachamim wanted it to look a little bit abnormal. This anomaly that's created within the halachas of Tumah is there to inform people that this Tumah is not a Tumah D'Oraisa, it's a Tumah D'Rabbanan. It is exactly because it is an anomaly that the Chachamim wanted to broadcast to people, this is a Tumah D'Rabbanan, not a Tumah D'Oraisa. And therefore, the Tumah is only going to be communicated only through actual Maga and not through Avir, even though really shouldn't make a difference. But the reason why the Chachamim said this is so that people understand that this is only a Tumah D'Rabbanan. What difference does it make? So the Gemara spells it out. So because now that's a Tumah D'Rabbanan, not a Tumah D'Oraisa, if Truma were to come into contact and becomes Tumah through a Tumah D'Rabbanan, you don't burn the Truma. You don't eat the Truma, because it's Tumah D'Rabbanan, but you don't burn it. You only burn Truma that becomes Tumah on a D'Oraisa level, not on a D'Rabbanan level. Okay. Tana Rabbanan. Let us just do a little bit more for this morning. Mispar shal parakim v'yizamal shal rehitne. Chibur l'tumah v'in chibur l'hazah. So again, within the discussion of Chibur, the Gemara is going to have one more round of this discussion. We're talking about scissors. Now, the Gemara describes it as a pair of scissors. Scissors that are made up of two parts. That's just by definition. That's how scissors work. Two blades that are attached to one another. And the izemel shel rehitni. Now, we're talking about a carpenter's plane. So you have the wooden handle and you have the razor on the bottom. So we're basically talking about tools that are a composite of two parts, but they're connected together. So chibur l'tumah v'in chibur l'hazah. So the Mishnah tells us, it's actually a Braisa, it's a Tosefta, but whatever, it's Tana Idik. So it tells us that this scissors now that's put together, it's considered connected for Tumah, which means to say that if Tumah were to come into contact with one of the blades of the scissor, the other blade now is considered connected and it's going to be Tumah as well. But then the Tosefta says something which is confusing. Let's say the Tumah that it comes into contact with is Tumah's mace. And in order to be Matari, you have to sprinkle it with the solution of the Paraduma. And you're doing Hazaa, you have to sprinkle both blades of the scissors. Even though for Tumah contraction, we said that they're connected, but for purification purposes, they're viewed as disconnected. And the Gemara says, wait one second. Manafshach, the question is obvious. Ichibur hu afilu hazaa nami, ilav chibur hu afilu tumah nami. Well, you have to start off with a premise, and then from there, you just simply apply the principles. But the Gemara says, is it connected or is it considered disconnected? If the two blades of the scissors are connected, so that should be true for both Tumah and for Hazah. And if they're viewed as disconnected, then, well, that should be true for both as well. So the Gemara says, so where's our premise? Sounds like there is no guiding principle. So the Gemara says, Amar Rava Dvar Torah B'Shas Malacha Chibor. So Rava says, well, actually it's fluid in terms of whether it's considered connected or disconnected. If you are using it, so it's considered connected. But when in storage, it's considered disconnected. And so since it has a fluidity, in terms of whether it's considered connected or disconnected. So now you can understand that the Chachamim are worried that people are going to obviously be confused. If it's only going to be considered connected during usage, so that means to say that when one becomes, when one blade comes into contact with Tumah during usage, so the other blade is fundamentally considered connected. If, however, the source of Tumah comes into contact with one blade not during usage, so only this blade becomes Tumah and the other one does not, but this distinction is just simply going to be confusing for people. And what the Chachamim did is they basically streamlined it. The Gazer, as we now turn to the top of Mem Tesam and Aleph, the Gazer Rabbanan Tumah Shalav B'Shas Malacha, Mishum Tumah Shabashas Malacha. And so what the Chachamim did in order to try to remove this kind of confusion is that they basically gave a blanket Tumah, and that we're going to be considering it to be connected both during usage, where there it's fundamental, and even during non-usage, where there, even though Halacha views them as disconnected, but the Chachamim said, but it's just too confusing, and so therefore we're just going to say, under all circumstances, they're viewed as connected. However, Alazash B'Shas Malacha, Mishum Hazash Shelo B'Shas Malacha. But when it comes to the purification process, here we have to go in the other direction, meaning that there are times they're viewed connected during usage. There are times that they're viewed as disconnected, meaning not during usage. And so here, in terms of purification, because we're going now in the other direction, we're removing the Tumah. So here, the Chachamim say universally that we're always going to view them as disconnected, and therefore the Hazah has to be done on both blades. Because even though during usage they're viewed as connected, but during non-usage, they're viewed as disconnected. And if you think about it more, when are you going to be sprinkling when are you going to do the Hazah? Probably during non-usage. So the Chachamim said that as a blanket rule, we're always going to view them as disconnected. We're going to assume that it was sprinkled during non-usage times. So that's the Gemara's explanation in terms of how to view these tools that are composite of, either in the case of scissors, two blades, in the case of the plane, the wooden handle and the razor on the bottom. So they are going to be considered connected for Tumah. They're going to be considered disconnected for Hazah. And where do we stand fundamentally on this issue? So really the distinction is made during usage and non-usage times. But the Chachamim, in order to streamline, says that for Tumah purposes, we're always viewing them as connected. And for Tahara purposes, we're going to always view them as disconnected. Let's quickly recap our morning. We started the fourth parak of Maseches Shabbos this morning. We talked about Hatmana. Hatmana is prohibited b'davar ha-mosif hevel, both on Shabbos and even before Shabbos. And so our Mishnah gave us a list of materials that are considered dvarim ha-mosifim hevel, things that actually add heat. The Mishnah does make a distinction between certain materials where they're going to be considered a davar ha-mosif hevel both when they're dry and wet, as opposed to other materials which are only mosif hevel only when they're moist but not when they're dry. The Gemara started off a discussion regarding the gefes shel zaysim. The Mishnah, when talking about the residue of the olive press, what about other presses? What about the residue of the sesame seed press? Is that also included as well? The Gemara's answer is yes, but the Gemara does make a subtle distinction, which really led us to a fundamental talk this morning regarding what exactly is the definition of hatmana. Tosfos giving voice to the idea that it's only going to be hatmana when the material itself is pressing against the walls of the pot. But if they're not, so then it's not going to be hatmana. The Gemara brought in two episodes of Rav and Rabbi Zera when they went to the house of the Reish Galusa, not really related to hatmana, but somewhat related, and why Rabbi was contemptuous about two practices of the attendant of the Reish Galusa. The Gemara went into a discussion regarding, if I use the tufts of cotton as for the purposes of hatmana, which under certain circumstances would it be okay, would that remove the muksa designation of the cotton? Interestingly, the Gemara concluded it does not remove it. And what we learned together this morning is that although you can't move muksa, but you can get benefit from a muksa item. The Gemara went into a discussion regarding the stuffing of pillows, a distinction whether I'm making the pillow for the first time versus I'm just simply putting back the stuffing that fell out of the pillow. Very briefly, we spoke this morning about opening a shirt on Shabbos, the difference between opening a shirt and opening a barrel and breaking the seal of the barrel. The Gemara made that distinction between the two cases. And then finally, for the remainder of today's daf, we talked about chibur. We talked about items that are connected to one another, albeit a temporary connection, but would that be viewed as the two items now becoming unified and becoming one item? And the Gemara explored this issue on many different issues, on many different items. This discussion that really took up most of the Amud Beis was not Shabbos related, was mostly Tumah Tahara related. The Gemara just used our Gemara as a launching pad, because these issues of Tumah Tahara obviously are not discussed in the Gemara. There's no Gemaras on these topics, right? We quoted this morning Mishnahs from Kalim and Uksin. There obviously are no Gemaras over there in Kalim nor in Uksin. And so the Gemara uses opportunities like these in order to expand our understanding of these Mishnayos. And basically, it was the Amud Beis today was a discussion of who views items that are temporarily connected. Who views them as mechubar? Who views them as connected? Do we view them as connected during the working process, during usage, even after usage? We made distinctions over there, and that covered our Amud Beis for today.